Dr. Seibel, your best resource for answers to all the questions you may have about your menopause experience. Dr. Maish Seibel is one of America's foremost authorities on menopause and is committed to supporting women in navigating the change for a healthy, vibrant life. He's editor of My Menopause magazine in the Apple newsstand and on Google Play, and founder of Menopause Breakthrough, a five-week online course that helps women create their own personal menopause breakthrough action plan. He's the former director of Harvard Medical School's Beth Israel Hospital Division of Reproductive Medicine, director of the University of Massachusetts Medical School's Complicated Menopause Program, and editor-in-chief for the medical journal Sexuality, Reproduction, and Menopause. Each month, Dr. Seibel will answer questions submitted by his community, real questions from women and the men who love them about the challenges and the blessings of menopause. Welcome, Dr. Seibel.
Sherry, thank you so much, and it's really a pleasure to address these questions because I know how important questions are, and I also know that going to the doctor, the visits last only about 8 minutes, and it's really so often not enough time to really get your questions answered. And that's what we're here for. And so I encourage you every month, just mail in the questions that are most pressing for you, and we'll do our best to get to your questions each month when you send them in. And you would send them, Sherry, what is the address that they send them to?
If they'll just go to askdrseibel.com, they'll be able to put the question right in the info form there, and we'll address it on the next show.
Awesome. So we'll do that, and we're going to be doing them on the third Thursday of each month, and we're planning to do them at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So we have a time and a place, and all we need is your questions, and we're happy to address as many as we can. And if we have several that are similar, I'll pick the most representative and do my best to answer all of them, and we'll certainly answer as many as we can. So with that, let's get started.
Awesome. So, Dr. Seibel, the first question we have is from Mary from San Diego, and she's asking, at what age should I start thinking about or maybe worrying about menopause?
Well, I'm really glad that that question was asked because the truth of the matter is it's a variable question, and the reason I say that is because many times women think that menopause is something that happens to older women. Well, that may be true because menopause can happen as late as 60 years old. The mean age in the United States is 51 years old. But here's the thing that some people don't know. 1 in 10,000 women are going to go into menopause before age 20. That's right, 1 in 10,000 before age 20. 1 in 1,000 before age 30. 1 in 100 before age 40, and 1 in 10 before 45 years old. So you've got 10% of women or more that are going to be in menopause at age 44 or younger. And remember that the symptoms of menopause is a window of time called perimenopause. And peri is kind of like that word perimeter. Peri means around the time. So around the time of menopause, perimenopause, is as long as a 10-year window. So if you're a woman who goes into menopause at age 40, let's just say, or at age 39 or 43, you could easily be experiencing symptoms of menopause as early as 10 years before that, so easily in your early 30s. So if you notice symptoms that are vaginal dryness or brain fog or some of the other symptoms that we'll talk about in other questions, they may be due to perimenopause. So it's a very important question and not something restricted just to women who are in their late 50s.
Wow, that's awesome. And that really ties to another question that we've gotten from several of our listeners that are asking, how do I know when I've entered menopause?
Well, that's a very important question because you can enter menopause because of a variety of reasons. And The most common reason for women is natural menopause, and that is usually at age 51. And the definition of that is 1 year after your last menstrual period. So natural menopause could be 1 year after your last menstrual period. And while the mean age is 51, if you were to go into menopause before age 40 and you went a year without having a menstrual period, assuming you weren't pregnant or some other condition going on, then that would be called premature menopause. But the definition of menopause is 1 year after your last menstrual period. Now, if you're a woman who's in her menstrual years and you have to have, let's say, surgery because your ovaries have to be removed, that's called surgical menopause. So even if you're 35 years old, if you have both, not one, but both ovaries removed, then you're in menopause. Now, it doesn't matter that your uterus is removed for this definition. In other words, let's say you're 35, your uterus is removed, and you stop having periods, but you still have your ovaries. You're not in menopause. But if your ovaries are removed so that your hormones are taken away, even if your uterus is left in or not, that's called menopause. So it's really about the ovaries no longer functioning, either due to natural reasons, surgery, or it could be due to conditions like, let's say, a woman were to go through chemotherapy and her ovaries stop working. Now, anytime a woman has periods and they stop, it's important, first of all, to see if you're pregnant, because that's the commonest cause of period stopping. But there could be other conditions too, like stress or extreme exercise or very poor nutrition or big changes in your weight. There's a lot of reasons why periods stop other than menopause, but it is a very common association with it. And if they're stopping for 3 months or more, go talk to your doctor about that.
Oh, wow, that's really helpful. The next question we have is from Janet, and she is asking, how can I protect myself against breast cancer during menopause?
Well, breast cancer, of course, is one of the most important and biggest fears that women have. And in menopause, which as we just talked about, in menopause after age 51, which is the most typical range, that's the age in which most breast cancers occur. As women get older, the risk of breast cancer goes up. So the best way to protect yourself against cancer or breast cancer in menopause is, number one, is to have regular breast exams. So annual breast exams, and also monthly, you can be examining yourself. And if you don't know how, you should have your doctor go over it with you. But basically, you want to lay flat on your back. And what you want to do is sometimes put a pillow under that shoulder blade so that the breast is flat, so that the nipple is right in the middle of the breast, so that the thickness of the breast is equally distributed around the nipple, so that you're feeling through the same amount of tissue all 360 degrees of your breast. And then you want to take the bottoms of your finger, not the tips of your fingers, but like your the last digit, the last joint of your finger, that part, the tips, and rub like spokes coming out of the hub of a wheel, and start at the nipple, and just in gentle circular motions, move from the middle to the outside, and then move over a few degrees and come to the outside till, like the spokes coming out of a wheel, you've gone all the way around the breast. And really, some women have very dense breasts. Some women have kind of, quote, lumpy breasts. There's so many different textures. But you have to find out what's normal for you. And what's really important is if anything is different or if anything is like blood coming from the nipple or any other discharge. That needs to be talked about with your doctor. Now, the other thing that's very important, of course, is that there are some things that lower your risk for breast cancer, and those include exercise. Believe it or not, if you go out and do regular exercise, you're not only improving the condition of your heart, but you're also lowering your risk for breast cancer. And what you want to do is, if you are a woman who has, you should also be getting regular mammograms, particularly at age 40 and beyond. You want to start getting mammograms. And the thing about it is that if you have a very high family history of breast cancer, if you have direct relatives, now we're not talking about your great aunt had it or your cousin had breast cancer, but if you have a sister or sometimes a brother, because men get breast cancer too, it's only 3% of breast cancer, but still it does happen, or your mother, and particularly before age 70, if she got breast cancer, these are first degree relatives, what it's called, direct link, then you want to be a little bit more diligent. You might want to talk about getting mammograms earlier or more frequently. Now, the other thing is if you have certain genes that put you at risk for breast cancer, and there are an increasing number of genes being found. Now, the most widely known are the so-called breast cancer genes, the BRCA, breast cancer genes, and that's come to a lot of publicity very recently in the terms of Angelina Jolie, because she's not the first celebrity that's been willing to go public about that, but she is now the most memorable one. And keep in mind that Angelina Jolie is 39 years old. And the thing about it is that she has the BRCA gene. She has the BRCA1 gene. There's also a BRCA2 gene, and there may be other breast cancer genes as well. And so she had her breast removed about a year, but 2 years ago, and then and had cosmetic reconstructive surgery. And then more recently, when she went to look around to see what happens in terms of her risks, she found out also that she had some markers that were she thought might be putting her at risk for ovarian cancer, because that BRCA gene not only increases the risk of breast cancer, but also ovarian cancer, and many people don't realize it, but also pancreatic cancer. But to back to her ovarian story, she had her ovaries and her tubes removed. And that's important because the tubes that are the conduits that get the egg from the ovary, they go through the tube in order to get to the uterus so pregnancy can occur. Actually, a large percentage of ovarian cancer actually starts in the fallopian tubes. So she had her tubes and ovaries removed to cut down her risk of ovarian cancer. Now, that puts Angelina Jolie in menopause at age 39. But she went on estrogen. And that's the last point that I want to make. And that is very important because many women think that estrogen increases the risk of breast cancer because of the very famous Women's Health Initiative, or WHI, study. But in fact, estrogen, particularly when given by itself, close to the time of menopause, actually lowers the risk of breast cancer by about 23%, according to a Journal of the American Medical Association article that came out a couple of years ago. So Angelina Jolie went on an estrogen patch and did that even though she was trying to prevent the risk of breast cancer, because she wanted to preserve her bones and she wanted to preserve her skin and her looks and her vaginal health and her emotional health and all the other things that estrogen can do, without increasing her risk of breast cancer. And the BRCA gene is not affected by taking estrogen. All the studies have shown, there was a recent study in particular that pointed this out, that being on estrogen and having the BRCA gene does not increase your risk of breast cancer. Now, why did people think that estrogen increased the risk of breast cancer? Because in the Women's Health Initiative, there were 8 more women per 10,000 that took the hormones estrogen plus progestin, hydroxyprogesterone, in a medicine called Prempro, the women who took Prempro did have an increased risk of breast cancer, 8 per 10,000, which, if you do the math, is 8 per 10,000, 0.8 per 1,000, or 0.08 per 100, which means the risk went up less than a tenth of a percent. But it went up in the women who got the Prempro. And what many people don't realize is the people who got that medicine were between the ages of 60 and 79 instead of the ones who didn't get the medicine who were between the ages of 50 and 59. So they were comparing 50 to 59-year-olds who didn't get the estrogen and the progestin to women who were 60 to 79, and voila, the women who were older had more breast cancer. So all of that data has been changed, and that's the subject of what I'm writing about in a new book I'm working on from Rodale Press called The Estrogen Window, which will come out in April of 2016. So I hope that answers the question about protecting yourself against breast cancer.
Wow, that was amazing. Thank you for that great information. It's amazing how much misinformation there is out there, and thank you for clearing up a lot of that. Well, moving on to the next question, we talked a little bit about symptoms. You mentioned that at the very beginning. We have several people that are asking about hot flashes. Mm-hmm. One person writes, what can I do to minimize these hot flashes? I now know what my mother meant by perpetual summer.
Well, hot flashes is a big thing for women. I mean, you may be a woman who has hot flashes occasionally, and they may be not so terribly interruptive for you, because hot flashes have two qualities. They have frequency, which means how often they come, and intensity, which means how hot did they get. And some women have less frequency and less intensity, so they're disruptive. I mean, they're unpleasant, but they're not really messing with their life. But other women will be in a situation where every hour they're having one or more hot flashes, and they're intense. And so what happens is they're up giving a presentation, or they're trying to talk with one of their colleagues, or they are in some public situation. And what happens is they get this intense hot flash that goes from their waist up to their face, and they turn beet red, and all of a sudden they're sweating so bad they have to run out and change their blouse because they've drenched it. And this can go on in the day, and it can go on at night as hot flashes or night sweats and be very disruptive to sleep and cause a person to not feel too well. So, you know, what can you do to minimize the hot flashes? Well, there's a lot of things that you can do. I mean, you can start off with very simple things. First, the very lifestyle things. Again, our friend exercise lowers the risk of hot flashes. And so if you do regular exercise, that's going to be very helpful for you. Number two is you want to hydrate. You want to drink at least eight ounce glasses or more of water a day. And that's the best liquid you can have in terms of staying hydrated. The third thing you want to do is to avoid triggers. Now, triggers could be for you stress. They could be certain foods, and the common foods that I hear about all the time are alcohol, particularly red wines and things with tannins in it, the spicy foods, the peppers, cayenne peppers, all those kinds of hot foods. Caffeine is an issue, and for some women this includes chocolate and other forms of caffeine. And so you want to avoid the things that you know are triggers. The next thing you want to do is to consider some of the over-the-counter options. And again, in the book that I'm doing, The Estrogen Window, I have a whole section on that. And you can find a number of options for over-the-counter. The thing I tell people about this is that everything works for some people, but nothing works for everyone. Some of the common ones include soy and black cohosh. There's some proprietary ones like Estroven and iCool, and there are other ones coming out all of the time. And I could talk about those at another time, but each one of those has certain benefits. I don't think any of them have any particular risks unless you're allergic to them specifically, and they can be helpful. Then the third level are prescription non-estrogens. And a new medication was just approved recently, and it is called paroxetine, and it is a medication that is taken. It's an SSRI medication, and it has the ability to lower hot flashes for women, and it is something that is newly available, and it is effective, and it's a way of dealing with it without taking estrogen. And finally, estrogen, which is probably the most effective treatment for hot flashes. Now, I didn't mention, but I want to just for completeness say that there's also things like cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a form of hypnotism or hypnosis, and it's a methodology that has been studied, and it's called CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and it's one of the best effective approaches that's non-medicine, that's no pills, no nothing. And it's a form of changing your reaction to the stimulus of a hot flash. Other things for some people, in addition to exercise, include meditation, tai chi, relaxation response, yoga, and things like that are also helpful for some people. But cognitive behavioral therapy as a non-medication is the best studied one.
Wow, that's awesome. It's I'm sure Karen is glad to hear that there are lots of alternatives for getting beyond that perpetual summer season. That's awesome. Terrific. So our last question for today is from Madeline in Syracuse. And she is saying she's gaining weight and she hasn't changed her eating habits at all. And she's wondering if it could be because she's entered menopause.
Well, you know, it's a good possibility that menopause is contributing to the situation. I mean, everybody's worried about the muffin top. And expanding midlines is something that many women will notice, and it's common. What happens is multiple things. Number one, from the standpoint of your overall body, is your metabolism may slow down. Not may, it will slow down. And it slows down about 3% per decade. So what that means is if at the time you were 30, and to the time you're 60, you're going to have a tremendous difference in ability to burn the calories that you consume, even if you eat exactly the same food. So number one is to realize that you may have to lower your caloric intake. So that's one thing. Number two, exercise, again, burns calories, but exercise does something else. It also helps you turn fat into muscle. Now, this matters because muscle burns about 3 times the number of calories as fat. So the more muscle you have, the more you're going to burn calories. Even if you eat the same amount, you're going to burn a greater number of calories. The third thing is estrogen. Estrogen does have an impact. Estrogen has the ability to increase insulin's effectiveness of driving sugars into the muscles that you've been building with your exercise and allowing you to consume more of the calories in an effective way that you are consuming instead of having those extra calories turning into fat and primarily depositing themselves in your midline. There's an increasing belief that the kinds of foods you eat make a difference. Certain foods may be causing allergies. People who have a tendency to gluten sensitivities or to certain foods like eggs or peanuts or corn people who have allergies to milk and other foods cause the inflammation in the stomach, which can lead to a leaky gut, what they call. What that means is that the cells in the intestine actually kind of widen and separate, and fluid can leak through that, which causes inflammation. And finally, but not insignificantly, as a lot of women at the time of menopause will find that their thyroid function has changed. And the thyroid is that butterfly-shaped gland on your vocal cord, right at the base of your neck, and that is something that controls your metabolism. That's also tied into estrogen, but independent of that, there's also a tendency for the thyroid to be affected, and low thyroid means your whole body is basically at a lower number of RPMs in motor terms, and it's burning less calories. So if weight is an issue, especially if it's combined with tiredness and weakness and maybe changes in hair and so forth, you might want to talk with your doctor about checking your thyroid level. So these are some of the things that you can do and how menopause and weight are connected.
Wow, that's amazing. Great information. Well, that's our five questions for today, Dr. Seibel. Any parting thoughts that you have for our listeners?
Well, the main thing is I want to thank you for tuning in, and remember, if you have questions, or ask your friends to send questions, and if you do, they can go to Ask Dr. Seibel, that's AskDrSeibel.com. You can leave your questions there, and then check us out, and we will be answering as many as we can in the time that we have, and try to address the things that are causing you worry, concern, challenges, or things you just want to know. So I want to thank you very much, Sherry. I want to thank everyone who's tuning in for joining us today at AskDrSeibel.com.
Thank you, Dr. Seibel.